Hello, and welcome to episode number 28 of the Point of Convergence podcast. As always, I am your host, Exoacademian. Ever since the release of videos showing images of strangely behaving vehicles, officially classified as unidentified aerial phenomena, entered the public sphere in 2017, there has been a rising tide of public and even government interest in what have more commonly and historically been referred to as UFOs, unidentified flying objects. This rise in interest crescendoed in a DoD report delivered to Congress recently, which has resulted in further speculation here in the United States and right around the world. Not surprisingly, the speculation tends to revolve around the nature and origin of these vehicles. As I and others predicted, the final UAPTF report delivered to the public, i.e. the unclassified version of the report, is nebulous enough to, at times, seemingly talk out of both sides of its proverbial mouth. And because of that deliberate, meticulously crafted wording, conversation near and far does still touch on the possibility of these craft being those of foreign adversaries, though no one in the know, so to speak, in the government really believes that anymore, because the leap in technology demonstrated is simply too great. That said, because the extraterrestrial possibility was not excluded from consideration in the report, even those who have historically steered away from speculation about non-human visitation are now bridging that conversation all across the globe. That is in itself something to celebrate. This marks a turning point never before seen in the history of our civilization. And we really should take a moment to recognize and revel in that new reality, even if most of us who've been looking at the data for years, if not decades, will argue that this is, of course, well overdue. But a win is a win, so we'll take it. The conversation, which those of us really immersed in this topic know is mystifying and multifaceted, is just beginning for much of the general public and even for many of our elected officials. But it is beginning, and again, that's worth celebrating. One can't finish what one hasn't begun. That said, when one pays close attention to the conversations that are being had all around the world, one thing becomes clear. When the non-human origin possibility is breached, it is almost solely in the form of so-called extraterrestrial visitors, i.e. physical beings who traveled here from some far-flung star system in sophisticated spacecraft. In this sense, the conversation quickly jumps into the well-grooved category of space aliens, which has been served up time and time again via our society's entertainment industry. The space alien notion in media is so ubiquitous now, in fact, that most people can't even consciously separate fact from fiction in their mind's eye anymore, as Diana Pasulka argued in her book American Cosmic. But those of us who studied the UFO phenomenon in a dedicated and granular way have long realized that this familiar category, namely that of space aliens, may only represent one small piece of a much larger puzzle. Indeed, the revelations that inevitably arise from a close study of this phenomenon seemingly give birth to a whole new set of questions for every one that it often only tentatively answers. Knowing this is the case, we might ask, is the general public ready for these revelations? Can they, quote-unquote, handle the truth, as complex and convoluted as it apparently is? And can they stomach entering into a conversation that has not yet served up clear, unequivocal answers, even after decades of underground study? Do they even have the attention span to do so? Unlikely, I would argue, for vast swaths of the population anyway. Modern human societies are simply not accustomed to this degree of unclarity about the nature of reality. And make no mistake, that's where these revelations lead, to questions about the very fabric of all that exists and to how it is all connected. The current models of reality will not only have to be revised as a result, but they will need to be recategorized as understandings that only apply to microenvironments seen at a certain local level. That in light of the totality of all that is, these notions are almost trite and simplistic. These are vast issues, giving way to bewildering, discombobulating questions, the likes of which our civilization has never yet had to deal with in a direct way. How will this be handled? What will the process look like as it rolls out in the months and years ahead? These are the thorny and yet fascinating topics we'll endeavor to address in this, the 28th episode of the Point of Convergence podcast. As we begin this week's podcast, let's first lay out the details so we're clear about what we're dealing with here and just how deep this rabbit hole goes. But first off, let's discuss the nature of the conversation currently being had amongst the public, just so we can see how far this conversation has to go, how far it has to progress before the public catches up with what this discussion actually involves. Now, if you do hear discussion about any kind of non-human intelligence, it's almost always in the form of space aliens, as I just mentioned. Now, recently, I saw a debate amongst the UK House of Lords discussing the consequences of this very UAPTF report. Now, first off, again, we have to acknowledge how historic this was. Here was a live debate amongst the United Kingdom's House of Lords discussing the UAPTF report, discussing the notion of unidentified aerial phenomena, UFOs. This was being discussed in the light of day in the halls of Parliament in the UK. That said, anyone with any familiarity with this topic would have been frustrated by this conversation, this discussion. It was remarkably simplistic and one-dimensional. For instance, one particular politician said something like, and I paraphrase here, "If these were ETs, we'd be photographing them with our modern smartphones left, right, and center." In other words, he assumes they'd just be parading across the skies in objects we could see and videotape and photograph with our smartphones willy-nilly. Number one, this of course assumes they want to be seen. And number two, that they don't have the technology or control of our perceptions to remain hidden if they so chose. Now, of course, there's plenty of literature behind the UFO phenomenon to suggest all of these are faulty assumptions. Of course, this individual didn't think to look into any of that literature. It was a ridiculous level of sloppy research and an astounding level of assumption. And this was amongst our politicians. Of course, part of the problem here is in regards to where one usually finds such a record. Academic studies, for instance, are often looked to from political circles. But of course, that's a huge part of the problem here because academia has long ignored this question altogether. So while the literature does indeed exist, and it's an extensive body of data at this point, it's not going to be found by making inquiries with our society's usual mainstream record keepers, i.e. academics. Another aspect of the problem when it comes to trying to advance a sophisticated, nuanced discussion about the UFO phenomenon is the nature of our media landscape today. This is no longer the era of Walter Cronkite, where the vast majority of the American population, for instance, would tune into one of three or so TV networks to hear from trusted authorities when it came to the day's news. Demographically speaking, today, anyone under about the age of 55 is more likely to log onto the internet and find their desired news sources to consume content. And of course, this has produced a series of echo chambers where people seek out and hear from voices that tell them what they already know and in many ways already know they want to hear. So in that sense, it's not surprising, in fact, that supposedly some aspects of the government involved with the UFO phenomenon, or the study of it anyway, have sought out specific individuals that can help disperse this conversation amongst a larger public. I speak here of people who have unique audiences, people like Sam Harris, who has said that he was approached to perform exactly such an action on behalf of the U.S. government. Now, if nothing else, this tells us that some people within the government with a deep knowledge of this topic have given great thought to how this is going to roll out, how they can control the narrative, so to speak. They have therefore reached out to specific individuals that have a unique and authoritative voice with different segments of the population so that they can try and roll this out in a controlled way in the midst of a media landscape that's very complex. And just to clarify, I'm not suggesting we should necessarily trust the motivations of these individuals within government who are thinking about these things. There's plenty of historical evidence, in fact, to suggest we shouldn't. 70 plus years or so, in fact. All I'm getting to here is that clearly these individuals recognize how difficult it's going to be to roll out any kind of conversation in a controlled way. It's very difficult to have a concise, sophisticated, nuanced, ongoing conversation about something as complex as the UFO phenomenon when we have huge segments of the population tuning into completely different media sources, and they're likely going to hear very different takes about the UFO phenomenon from the get-go based on the worldview perspectives of those individuals in positions of authority. Part of the challenge here involves critical thinking skills, or the lack thereof, in our modern society. For instance, some people are just quick to jump on conspiracy theories, period. So when they hear that the UFO phenomenon involves a conspiracy theory of the government covering up information for 70 plus years, they'll quickly jump on board. They'll be persuaded in a heartbeat. The challenge, though, is that these same people don't show basic critical thinking skills when it comes to distinguishing something that is evidentially true, like the UFO phenomenon, from other ideas, other conspiracies that are quickly demonstrably false for anyone who does any kind of research and exercises basic critical thinking skills. And that often muddies the water amongst a different, completely different section of the public that assumes that, oh, if this group believes that, A, and they also believe B, then the entire thing must be hogwash because we know A is hogwash. Therefore, by association, B must be hogwash as well. And of course, this second segment is also the kind of group that assumes that if this was real, we would already know about it. So you have two very different groups who come on board for very different reasons, and it doesn't move the conversation forward. Now, I just mentioned a second segment of the population that has a strong confidence in the controlling narrative, in the mainstream perspective. Now, there are various ways that this narrative is rolled out. One of them that has real gravity in today's world is search engine rankings. And of course, as we all know, there's only a few companies that control the vast majority of data that is produced when people ask questions on the internet. Now, in the midst of something like a pandemic, we can, of course, most of us anyway, understand why it's important to be able to control the quality of data. When you're trying to ensure public safety, you want to make sure people are getting accurate, scientifically backed data. Now, I understand even there's some nuance to the discussion, but as a general rule, that makes a lot of sense. The challenge comes in learning where to draw the line and who gets to draw the line. Because when the controlling narrative is wrong, as in the case of the UFO phenomenon, then that means people will continue to be served up less quality information time and time again. The less quality results will show up ahead of the better quality results because the controlling narrative dictates that that should be the case. Behind the scenes, these algorithms are being tweaked to make sure this is the case. Again, the challenge is, when the mainstream narrative is incorrect, this only persists the exact problem we're trying to overcome. Okay, so I think that serves as a pretty useful summary of the overall challenges we face in trying to advance a nuanced discussion of the UFO phenomenon in the general public. Now let's move on to the second part of the podcast when we talk about what issues we actually need to bring forward. What kind of deep questions do we need to get people to start thinking about? Question number one, who are they? As we've already discussed, when the question of who these beings may be, if they are indeed non-human, is put forward, the assumption is extraterrestrial. That assumption is so ubiquitous, in fact, that no one stops to ask the question about other possibilities. It's just assumed that ET is the only other option. But of course, as we've discussed on this podcast many times, there are actually numerous options. And my perspective has been and continues to be that there are likely numerous actors with different origins and perhaps different agendas all acting at the same time. That only makes this already complex conversation much more complex. Now, because we've discussed these different options many times on this podcast, here I'll just give a quick overview of the different options. They could be ET, that is extraterrestrial as conventionally conceived. They could also be a kind of ET that is more complex than we understand yet. There is also the possibility of cryptoterrestrials, as discussed by Mac Tonies in his book, The Cryptoterrestrials. Here we speak of physical beings who are stealthy, but are here, physical beings in our very midst, in our physical dimension, just stealthily staying out of our way. Now, for some, that will be even more frightening than the idea of extraterrestrials only recently visiting us, because if these cryptoterrestrials exist, then they've likely been here all along. Another possibility, of course, is ultra-terrestrials, and this opens up notions like interdimensionality, which again is going to be a huge stretch for vast swaths of the population. Here we're speaking of beings that are sometimes here and sometimes not, and then can pop in and out of our existence, that this partially may explain why we see even vehicles that seem to pop in and pop out of existence instantaneously. Another possibility is entities that are time traveling. There has even been suggestions that these others, some of them anyway, may be us from the future. In fact, I did an entire podcast on the notion that these could be us from the future, but with a genome spliced with other life forms from our planet. Regardless of which of those origin stories we turn to, one thing the data does seem to point to is that these others, many of them anyway, seem to be able to manipulate both space and time, or at least our perception of those. And when that's the case, as Jacques Vallée has said, then from our point of view, they could be from anywhere or any time. And that only further complicates an already convoluted picture. Now, as I mentioned in the introduction, and as I've touched on previous podcast episodes, part of the enigma of the UFO phenomenon is that questions that begin here eventually spiral out into larger questions about the nature of ultimate reality itself. That we find crossover phenomena, that even though we used to think of different categories as distinct that should be studied in their own right, this phenomenon suggests that these are somehow all connected, that some sort of meta-analysis is needed to make sense of it all. One such crossover is between the others and the dead. By the way, for those of you curious to pursue this further, I did an entire podcast episode on this very topic. And Whitley Strieber is an individual that we're all familiar with, no doubt, who's had frequent interactions that involved both the others and the dead. He's not only experienced this, but so have other people in his presence, often at his cabin in New York. Now, while this seems counter to common sense at first, this actually makes sense when you think about the fact that many of these encounters with the others seem to happen in an altered state of consciousness. But of course, this inevitably leads to a necessary reframing of what counts as quote-unquote reality. What if our waking conscious state is only one of many possible modalities? This is, again, a new question that our society needs to think about, needs to confront in a real and meaningful way. What if some of these entities cross back and forth regularly? What if their normal, quote-unquote, home base is one of these other modalities, and we only sometimes come into contact with them because of that? What if our dead, who actually are not dead at all, but just in a different modality now, are somehow able to interact with these others because of these different modalities? And maybe the entities are able to serve as bridges to allow these people who've left this plane to come back and visit us. This could be the case. And of course, this completely reframes our current understanding of how life, death, and reality works. Now, if that wasn't already bizarre enough, this rabbit hole, of course, only gets deeper. The thing is, if they can control human perception by serving up distinct simulations for thousands, maybe even millions or billions of people at the same time, how does one go about studying this from within the confines and assumptions of science? And just to be really clear here, I'm not talking about them serving up a simulation to thousands, perhaps even millions of people at the same time. I'm talking about their ability to serve up distinct simulations or experiences for each person amongst a group of thousands or millions or maybe even billions. How does that complicate our notion of how we can understand, study, and draw conclusions about quote-unquote reality? Of course, in my podcast episode about the events at Fatima and the apparition scene there, that many believe is an example of the UFO phenomenon, that's exactly what happened. Thousands of people saw something, even from 10 miles away from the epicenter. But what people saw, even the messages they received, varied. And yet, stations, astronomical observatories, and whatnot, that were using devices to measure, didn't pick up anything. And again, though, 70,000 people will tell you otherwise. That shows you how complex this really is. And again, this begs the question, if even time and the order of events can be manipulated by these others, even within our shared physical reality, what does this say for the sufficiency of the scientific method to make headway in studying such matters? Now, retired U.S. Army Intelligence Colonel John Alexander has discussed this very thing, and he calls it precognitive sentient phenomena. He talks about how this made scientific study very difficult, if not nearly impossible, at Skinwalker Ranch. Basically, whenever they would try and set up variables by which they could study something, they would find that the experiment had been messed with in some way that made study and drawing conclusions virtually impossible. And just to be abundantly clear, the reason why John Alexander coined this expression precognitive sentient phenomena is because he saw what looked like entities knowing the future, knowing what was going to happen ahead of time. So that made using the scientific method to conduct research practically impossible. Now, as if the rabbit hole was not already deep enough, it goes deeper yet. Remember earlier, I mentioned that various phenomena that were once part of different fields of inquiry have been shown to be somehow connected, that there's some sort of crossover. Contact with non-human intelligence is one form, and this isn't just space aliens or interdimensionals. It could be a variety of forms, all non-human intelligence, though. Also, near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, remote viewing, contact with apparitions. All of these different categories are somehow connected. That's what the data suggests. Many people who have had any one or more of these experiences also come back with increased capacities as compared to who they were before. These increased capacities fall often along the psi spectrum, including, for instance, precognitive dreams. Now, as I've mentioned before, we can't go very long asking questions about who they are without eventually ending up with questions about who we are. And it's not just the UFO phenomenon that leads us here. Parapsychology is another field of inquiry that is finding very similar results, results that question the dominant narrative as to the nature of reality. Many of these results, evidenced in both the UFO phenomenon and parapsychology, fall along the psi spectrum. Here we're talking about human capacities for telepathy, telekinesis, precognition, remote viewing, and general presentience. In other words, many of the capacities that some people will look at and consider quote-unquote alien may actually be something innate to human beings, even if it is mostly dormant or at an early stage of its evolutionary development. More importantly, the fact that these capacities not only belong to quote-unquote aliens, but also to human beings, and the fact that we find so much crossover between various categories like contact with non-human intelligence, contact with the dead, near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, remote viewing, etc. All of these seem to serve as spokes connecting to some central hub where consciousness may be at the root. That's one way to look at it. Another way to see it is this is just reality. This is just at the root level how reality is constructed. And what we're observing is merely phenomena produced by this. Phenomena that up until now we've either dismissed as not existing, or if we have acknowledged its existence, we've assumed it's distinct, separate, and unconnected. What recent data is showing us is that this is anything but. This is what we need to introduce to the general public. This is the complexity, the fascinating complexity that we need to introduce to the conversation. Now, what has been clearly evidenced both by what I described today and what you've no doubt noticed when it comes to the public nature of the conversation right now, we have a long way to go. Most of what we've discussed today has not even been touched on. This is very much about the iceberg, and people are just now acknowledging that they're seeing something surface above the water. Little do they know, there's a massive structure that goes well below the surface. And in this case, it touches absolutely everything. I would also argue, perhaps somewhat counterintuitively, that the further along we get in terms of the public conversation acknowledging these other aspects, the messier this is going to get. Things are going to be tumultuous for some time until we reach a new plateau or sink point. Remember, we're just beginning now. One thing I do know, patience and grace, both to help others and to preserve our own sanity and mental health, really, is going to be essential. I make that point for a couple of different reasons. Number one, these revelations are going to be completely, utterly overwhelming for some people. Indeed, vast swaths of the population, probably. Remember, we talked about people only being able to ground information within their current paradigm. They're going to try to make sense of these revelations based on their current model of reality. That's just how people work. This is true both of people's intellectual conclusions and their emotive responses. And we'll need to exercise patience and grace to help these people because not many of them will be responding from the most enlightened perspectives. We'll also need patience and grace because for some time yet, we're likely to be confronted with arrogance and ignorance from the gatekeepers of our society, those who adhere almost religiously so to the current dominant paradigm of scientific materialism. But I would just leave you with this one note of encouragement. In the long run, this will be well worth it, because not only does it afford us a new way of understanding as a civilization, but more importantly, a new way of being. never forget these profound words of Arthur Schopenhauer that have been demonstrated to be oh so true time and time again in our history. Quote, all truth passes through three stages. First, it is ridiculed. Second, it is violently opposed. Third, it is accepted as being self-evident, unquote. And on that note, we've come to the close of another edition of the Point of Convergence podcast. Let's keep this conversation going and growing. But until next time, friends, from deep within the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, this is Exo Academian signing out.